Welcome to Dietitians Uncorked, a podcast hosted by Kat and Kelly, two registered dietitians who co-founded Nutriving, a virtual nutrition practice. We talk all things food, nutrition, life, and of course, wine. This is a judgment-free zone where all foods fit and all bodies are welcome. Thanks for listening. Hello, everyone. We are so excited to have you back for another episode of Dietitians Uncorked. This is Kelly here, and I have Kat with me. Hi, Kat.
What's up? Hello.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys and do a quick plug. Kat and I were talking the other day about how we're really proud of how far our business has come, and we offer a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of different offers. And there's a lot of offers that are free of charge, right? So we have our podcast, which you can listen to for free. We have tons of recipes on our website, nutriving.com. We also, back from the grave, Kat did these like when we first opened, and they are incredible. She did an entire meditation affirmation series in two languages, you guys. English and Spanish. Kat's like blushing right now, but I have to tell the people, Kat, because they're so good. I wanted to give that
you're
plug.
You're too kind.
I'm serious though. Like these, I was listening to them the other day and I was like, we need to talk about these more because so many people could benefit. These English speakers, Spanish speakers, you can find them. They're on both, right? Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you look up our business name, for sure Spotify.
Yeah.
I probably should have checked before I started talking about this, but if you go to Spotify and search our business name, so not Dietitians Uncorked, this podcast that you're listening to, but Nutriving, they will come up and you'll see all the meditations right there for free. You can listen to Kat's beautiful voice and work on, you know, your food-body relationship, which is very central to the episode we're going to talk about today.
Damn, you are just hitting those transitions so well. It's like you're just been media trained to be like, and we are transitioning to this topic.
I've had a lot of coffee today, so I'm like running real quick.
Yeah. Speaking of drinking coffee, you are drinking something else?
We are finally drinking wine together again. It's been so long. Yes, I have with me today. I've actually been really obsessed with it for a while. It's a grocery store wine. It's by Bread and Butter, which, pull up my Vivino app. It's a winery. It's from Napa Valley. I don't know if Bread and Butter is the name of the winery per se, but it's the name of the wine. It's a Pinot Noir, and it's really good. It's like the perfect balance for me, and I've been loving the Pinot Noirs, which I never thought I would say, but here we are.
That's great. I think I had that wine, Bread and Butter, like a few episodes ago, but it might've been the Merlot or the Cab, but yes, such a solid pick. I'm drinking Two Buck Chuck.
Also a solid pick.
Trader Joe's. And it's just what the doctor ordered. I am back at my stomping grounds, after a lot of traveling and, I was feeling really jet lagged for a long time. And if you've never been jet lagged, you are one lucky person. It is rough.
Yeah.
You've been jet lagged before, right?
Oh, for sure. Many times.
Oh my God. You feel all sorts of feelings. Mm-hmm. And like you're under the influence of so many substances when it's just lack of sleep. It's
right.
Crazy.
And almost like you are tipsy or hungover or both at the same time, but you're not.
But like you're sober, but you're acting not. Slightly off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So let's introduce today's topic, which is a part two. Hella. So the first episode, if you haven't listened to it, of part of the series is, it's about a concept that is sort of trendy right now. It's called Almond Mom. I think what was the actual title of our podcast?
Did you grow up with an almond mom? I believe.
That's it. Did you grow up with an almond mom? And we introduce what it is, in kind of our thoughts on that, from a professional perspective, a nutrition perspective, of what that does and what is sort of the influence that's had on a whole generation. And I think this second part, we want to touch a little bit more on maybe more actionable tips from also a professional perspective. So we could probably talk about this from multiple perspectives. We could probably do like a 10 series parts for this, but we want to more so talk about it from maybe if you are thinking about seeing a dietitian or have had this sort of this concept of an almond mom in your radar a little bit. You listen to the first episode, you're like, oh my God, we want to give you more tools for dealing with potentially an almond mom or just even an almond mom culture, just like sort of being immersed in that. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a free form episode, as that's how we do these days. So this is really an open conversation between Kat and I that we really hope, you know, opens, if you're listening, opens your eyes to kind of thinking about, you know, did I grow up with an almond mom or an almond parent? You know, so essentially a parent figure who might have been very controlling, you know, makes explicit comments about, you know, a child's body or what a child eats or how much the child eats. If you feel like you grew up with a parent figure, mom, dad, or otherwise, that kind of fits the bill, then, you know, we want to talk about what that might mean for you now as an adult, because Kat and I have worked with a lot of different people at this point throughout our career, and the number of times, I'm sure you can agree, Kat, but the number of times that experiences come up from childhood when we're working with a patient or a client in a one-on-one setting, it's all the time, right? Because things that happen when we're younger, especially around food or your body, your changing body, right? You think about how many physical changes a child goes through as they become an adult. Some of those experiences can really stick with you and have a tremendous effect on your current relationship with your body and with food. And often people don't even know that until they have a space, whether that's nutrition counseling or therapy, or maybe a really, you know, supportive friend or supportive family member that you're comfortable enough to share those things with. Many times, like, people don't even realize it until they get that opportunity and that space to just, like, think about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one example that I can really speak to you closely, I'm Latina, I'm from Chile, and we, in our culture, we call, like, people that are quote-unquote chubby or heavier set, whatever the potentially endearing, but most of the time really just, like, not nice to hear. We call people like that gordita or gordito. It's like a cute way of saying whatever. And we might actually, like, culturally, you can use that term despite, you know, whether that person is big or not big, actually. You can actually call children that as, like, a cute term. I don't know why we do this. And I have been in conversations where that term sort of was brought about based on maybe some eating habits or something that happened. Let's say somebody is tired and snacky, and they'll go and be like, oh, gordita, like, go look for here, whatever. And how detrimental that term is. And often that term comes, I mean, it can be from, you know, an aunt or a friend or whatever, but often it's a parent calling their children or kids that. And how poisonous some of these terms can really be, in sort of, it shows up in such a dramatic way when you're engaging in eating something that's probably not considered super nutritionally dense. It relates to this concept because it like, with my patients, it's sort of something that they think about all the time. I mean, it's front and center of their minds when they're about to make an eating decision, particularly when they're hungry and it might not be a time to eat, like it might be in between meals, just how massive that impact of calling somebody that or being aware of their eating habits and calling them gordita and how difficult that is in order to move on and have a good relationship with food.
I'm trying to think. In English, I feel like there's not... Maybe it's because things just sound cuter in Spanish. Like, there's so many... I feel like there's just more nicknames that you can choose from, but I can't really think of an English equivalent, you know, like a phenomenon that's quite as common as like gordita, gordito. Can you think of anything like in English that seems comparable?
And if you ask me to translate, essentially what I'm saying is like little fatty. I mean, it just sounds like
so mean in English.
Just like nails on a chalkboard. Like that is what it sounds to me. It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But culturally here, it's really not, it's not taken that way. However, and this is a big however, I have to say that although it's not ill-meaning, it's not something that people are trying to hurt your feelings, it sometimes has nothing to do with your appearance. It often does. And if it doesn't, and you grew up with an almond mom, or you grew up in an almond mom culture of like really trying to shrink your body to as small as it could possibly get, being called that does affect our psyche. And I have been in sessions of nutrition counseling where this comes up, and they're like, there was a before and after somebody called me that. And it really impacts. So as cute as it may sound and as like non-threatening as it may be, and even if the person means nothing malicious by it, I don't think we should call anybody by anything that might make that person feel bad about their body. And you know, it's not as innocuous as people may think, even though culturally we defend it like it is.
Yeah. I think even zooming back a little bit, because so if you, you know, didn't grow up in a Latino culture, you know, and you can't relate to that term, even thinking about, you know, if a child, let's take the same situation, right? A child is like going to get a snack or whatever, and a parent or guardian figure is constantly just like commenting on it, right? So maybe they don't call the child a name, but maybe every time the child like eats a certain snack or eats at a certain time, the parent calls it out, right? This can be a behavior that an almond mom would display, an almond guardian. And so what happens is that when this is a built-in pattern, like the child experiences this for years, potentially. Like I have had patients who talk about the fact that they still hear that, you know, like they go to reach for a snack and that's what they hear. Like that's what they think about, because the association at that point is so strong that they can't separate the behavior of eating from that voice in their childhood. And that leaves a lot of scars and can greatly, greatly affect how someone feels about their body, how they feel about food, you know, feeling like food is the enemy, or like you don't have control, like you're a slave to food. Like there's so many consequences that can come out of that. And it's often really heartbreaking, because if someone is in nutrition counseling, right, they're taking steps to repair that relationship, to work on their health, you know, to meet their nutrition goals. And so they might be farther along in this journey than someone who's, you know, not in nutrition counseling or not in therapy or whatever. And so it's such a long process, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because the experience, you know, is years or decades, and then the aftermath just like can go on forever, right? Especially if you don't have access to support, professional support.
Yeah. I will say something to you. It's like this whole concept of an almond mom, if you didn't hear the first episode, you really should, because I, I think this conversation would make a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. We did kind of touch on what that means, but in the article that we're basing this topic off of, which now there's more than one. I mean, there's a few out there. One of the things they touch on is this sort of concept that it's sort of like it's a mom attempting to protect their kid from obesity or overweight or just being a certain way that the mom deems unhealthy, mm-hmm. even though it's really kind of an obsession with thinness. And I think that it's important to mention here that so many of us, and I'm going to include myself here, we believe that sometimes the feeling of guilt and shame that something like this might cause is a good motivator to keep us in line, to like be quote unquote healthy and restrict the unhealthy foods because we're going to get a specific way that we're not going to like it. And so there's kind of like a weird like holding on to that I have seen in my clients, I have personally done before. I'm like, well, if I feel bad about this, I'm actually going to be more likely to not overeat, not, do this whatever X behavior that is deemed unhealthy. But as a professional and in my practice, when we're talking about cognitive behavioral therapy, when we're talking about behavioral changes, about the way we approach to food, I have never seen anyone be able to effectively use shame and guilt like that in a way that results in positive outcomes for health. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking physical, I'm talking about weight, I'm talking about relationship with food, I'm talking about actual numbers in glucose, cholesterol, you name it. And the reason why that is, and in diving a little deeper into this topic, it's interesting how shame and guilt work that way. Is they want, it's almost like that process keeps you stuck. It's like you are just in this never-ending cycle of eating and feeling guilty, eating, feeling guilty, eating, feeling guilty. It's not the kind of motivation that you think is going to spring you forward and move past it. And so clinging to that notion of guilt and shame about food and about your body, you're actually clinging to this vicious cycle of feeling supervised, of feeling ashamed, of feeling uncomfortable, rather than what you believe might happen, which is spring you forward out of that and make better choices, quote unquote. Because that's not how shame works.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good, that's an action tip in and of itself, right? If you can learn to like really tune inward, because we all know what shame and guilt feel like. It can be a very visceral feeling. So sure. Even if you're not having like conscious thoughts, as you're eating or whatever it may be, you might still have that like internal just kind of like pit in your stomach. Those are things to pay attention to because those are signals, right? So if you're noticing kind of like icky feelings or feelings of guilt and shame, and you just haven't given yourself the space or you haven't had the space to really think like, where is that coming from? Like, why do I feel that way? But that can often be a first sign, is kind of that visceral mm-hmm. feeling. Mm-hmm. And so if you're listening to this and you're like, yeah, that's me, like that makes sense, then as scary as it is, thinking about what do you need, from here? Like, is talking with a professional something that's accessible to you? Is it available? Is it a good time in your life? Is it feasible? Because for many people, these wounds can be really, really deep, especially if they truly had, this almond mom figure, almond parent figure, then often professional help is definitely warranted. But, even if that's not on the table for you for whatever reason, or if you feel like, your wounds are there, but they're not like super deep, right? If you're in that boat and you're like, I can't do therapy right now. I've worked 14-hour days, right? There's a million things that could happen, but even just seeking out resources, like there are so many wonderful books, podcasts, support groups like online where people share their experiences, journaling, meditation. Like there are so many tools that are available that don't have to cost money, right? That can really help you kind of analyze where you're at and what you've been through and how that's currently affecting your nutrition and your health.
Yeah. The intuitive eating book, one that we mention all the time. Mm-hmm. Gosh, one more opportunity to throw that in there. It's just such a good read. Mm-hmm. Another one that I think it's important, is boundaries here. And I, as I'm saying this, I'm feeling a bit like I'm not great at boundaries. I'm working on it, but I'm not great at it. And I think when it comes to maybe a parent figure, even somebody who's not a parent, who just sort of oversees your eating choices, if they're around still and making comments when you are around them, asking them in a very loving and respectful manner not to, is such a huge step for your own mental health. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is worth it, even if it's a moment of having an uncomfortable conversation with somebody. You don't need to make it a big deal. It doesn't need to be dramatic. No one needs to, you know, make a scene. But it's important for you to protect your mental health. Mm-hmm. It's so important for you to protect your mental health, especially when it comes to food, because we have to eat to survive and we have to eat multiple times a day. And so if you have one less thing that is on your mind circling around and making you feel terrible, if you have one less thing to worry about, gosh, I feel like that could make such a huge difference. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. So if boundaries is something you need to look at here, I highly, highly, highly recommend that. Maybe it doesn't need to be like massive conversation, but a small step towards boundaries around your mental health and food. That's huge.
Yeah. I think along with, you know, seeking whatever resources make sense for you at the time, I think boundaries is equally important, especially if you're in a setting where those, you know, comments or looks continue to happen. And for some people, I know it can be really overwhelming to think about confronting that, like when it's happening. So let's say it's your spouse, right? And your spouse is commenting on like what you're eating or not eating. I think sometimes, maybe spouse is not a good example, but just think of someone, a loved one, right? Someone who's close to you who likely, you know, might have good intentions in their head, but their comments about your eating or your body are making you feel bad. Sometimes confronting them in the moment is really terrifying for people. Like if you're listening to this and you're like, I cannot do that. Like I can't just say it in the moment. Then an alternative is to think about, you know, maybe another time when you're with that person and things are going well, right? You're just like hanging out, like a low stress time. Sometimes addressing something that's really touchy at a different time, like not in the heat of the moment, can be really helpful. It might feel a little less scary or more accessible, and it kind of takes the drama out of it, right? Because you think about the emotional state you're in after someone makes a comment like that versus, you know, your emotional state if you're just hanging out on a normal day, grabbing coffee or whatever. How you approach those two, it could be the same conversation, right? But how you approach it because of how you feel inside could make them feel very different. So if you're someone who's not, you know, not currently used to setting boundaries or having, you know, you just feel uncomfortable with tough conversations, which is many, many people. Like you are completely normal if that's how you feel. But I'm just mentioning this because it is an alternative to think about. And I've had clients who've done this, who like tried to address it in the moment and it didn't go so well. Like it created so much anxiety in that person. And so thinking about other ways around it, because at the end of the day, boundaries are key, right? They're still important. So as scary as it can be, that conversation, you know, it has to happen one way or another.
Yeah. something else that might not seem related, but I think it is we have this sort of, I don't know why, but we have this sort of assumption that if, like, I eat French fries tonight, that tomorrow I'm going to wake up with 5 or 10 pounds heavier than I was before. And, like, logically, makes no sense. But, like, we do have that belief. We talk this often with people, like if you went out and you had pizza or whatever, and it was highly processed and highly salt heavy, and then you went and stepped on the scale and like you saw a big change, like a lot of this has to do with salt, a lot of this, you know, whatever. Sometimes after engaging in eating some of those foods and you feel heavier and things are kind of feeling a little tight in your clothes and you're just like not feeling great about it. Wear loose fitting clothes that day. You know, it might have been a special occasion. You might have done this in a moment where the high emotions were involved. It might have been a happy moment. It might have been a sad moment, but be kind to yourself and just wear loose fitting clothing if you're feeling uncomfortable, because one, it's just way more comfortable. Nobody needs to like squeeze into pants. Mm-hmm. Like nobody needs that. And two, if anyone's making comments about your body and you're already feeling like you're needing to suck things in and just hold your breath and like walk really funny and only show your side, you know, whatever, trying to hide things in your clothing, it just exacerbates everything way more. Mm-hmm. So it's a vulnerable moment already. Why don't just help yourself out, wear something comfy, have some pants that, you know, fit okay, or, you know, are a little loose and you feel comfortable in them. Because then when we move past the moment of maybe feeling guilty, feeling shame, feeling vulnerable, if you're moving past it, you can say, oh my gosh, it was the salt, or like, I did gain some weight, but I'm going to take care of myself in a nutrition self-care mindset, not in a guilt and shame, my parents or my loved one made a comment about my body, now I need to like restrict and do self-harm, which a lot of times that's what happens. So yeah, pay attention to how your clothes fit, and if they're feeling real tight and uncomfortable, you know, you don't need that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a common theme so far in what we've talked about is really taking steps to make yourself more comfortable, right? Whether that's physically or emotionally, by setting boundaries, finding resources that work for you. Like it's acknowledging that whatever you went through in your childhood is, you know, still affecting you in terms of your relationship with food and body, which even that, simply acknowledging it and being able to accept it, that can take a lot. Like that can take a lot of inner strength, and you know, there's so much wrapped up in that because, you know, you love your parent figure, right? There's a lot of love there. And so sometimes it can be really confusing to be like, well, I love this person, but I'm also kind of mad, you know, about all this stuff that happened. So it's a really sticky situation, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're an adult, I think most of our listeners are 18 and above, but if you're an adult, right, we're in charge of taking care of ourselves at this point. So often that may involve, you know, working through things that happened in the past and trying to make yourself feel as comfortable and supportive as possible right now. One thing I wanted to mention before we kind of probably wrap up here. I think we're going to have more parts of this podcast related, but we have other ideas for related episodes. But I wanted to mention that for clients I've had who have very intrusive thoughts, like when they're eating or thinking about food or trying on clothes and, you know, looking at their body, if you're someone who's experiencing very intrusive thoughts throughout that, it can be really challenging, but I've seen it be so powerful when you consciously combat that thought. So this can be as simple as like you're trying on clothes and in your head you're like, oh my God, my stomach's so big. Like, why is it shaped like that? I don't like that. I can't wear this. Like you start to spiral, right? You're just going down and down and down. And I'm not saying this is easy at all, but with consistent practice of intentionally challenging that thought, So maybe it's as simple as, you know, saying something that you're grateful for. If your initial thought is like, oh, I hate X about my body, then counter that with a thought like, I am grateful that I was able to walk to the bus today, you know, to get to this store to try on this sweater. But something that combats that energy, because otherwise you're just letting it win, right? You can't possibly pull out of that place if you're not consciously combating those thoughts.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. We're going deep.
I know.
We're just like, you know, like no humor in the, no, I'm just kidding. But I think the reason why this is so serious, and you and I take this the shit really seriously, is because it is so common. It's almost mm-hmm. like an experience that often people don't talk about. I think we're talking about it more culturally, but growing up in a generation that was obsessed with being skinny, like there's just no way we would have come out on the other side without having some serious consequences of that obsession. So we're here for you if you need some support.
Yes.
We also have resources for our, you know, meditation affirmations. We have some good we got some good blog posts about this topic because we feel very passionate about it. And if you're like come really far in this journey and you're listening to this and you're like, oh man, I've done some of these things. Like I'm feeling really good. We'd love to hear it because hearing those stories, I think can help if we can share them with other clients who are maybe not as far along in that process. Could be really wonderful to hear. So if you feel comfortable, we would love to hear from you. We have our meditation affirmations available in two languages on our website under resources, I believe, and meditations. And so we are so grateful that you tuned in. We have a cool episode coming up in the next 2 weeks. I won't tell you what it is, so you tune in.
It's a secret. It's going to be great, though.
It's really going to be really good. We cannot wait to share more of our resources with you. If you have any topics you'd like us to touch on, you know where to find us. Yeah. So have a fantastic day, friends. Bye.
Thanks for listening.